Getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Hey, everybody, this is Paco.
Hey, this is George.
Yeah, this is our year in review. Or, as we like to call it,
Requiem for a Streaming Service. That's just...
You got that right.
Yeah. We, even though there weren't a lot of documentaries on CISO, we watch all of our documentaries on streaming services for the most part. A lot of Netflix and Hulu's really come in the game real hard lately. Have you noticed
Thank
that?
Thank God.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Amazon's trying. I've watched a couple documentaries on Amazon lately, and they're all kind of pretty shitty. Like quality-wise.
Really? I've only seen one lately, and I don't think it's exclusive to Amazon. I don't think... Are they doing exclusive documentaries on Amazon?
No, but like they're... Like in the Amazon Prime, I just watched a Led Zeppelin documentary last night, and it's not good.
When did that... Is that a recent thing, or did it come out a while ago?
I think it came out a while ago.
Yeah.
I don't know. I also watched one on The Doors, and it was like pretty much the shittiest documentary I've ever seen in my life.
Yeah,
just because of all the like, if you had if it was a drinking game and you drank every time they used the word shaman or mystic or, you know, wizard, I don't know, it's like you'd just be wasted. Mm-hmm. I hate the whole shaman mystic shit that was around Jim Morrison. It's like, especially now at my age, I'm like, he was a 25-year-old drunk, like, mm-hmm. you know, he wasn't a shaman.
Yeah,
come on, guys. That whole 60s thing.
Have I told you the story about how a friend of mine thinks he might be Jim Morrison's son?
No,
I don't necessarily want to. I'm not sure that there's been no blood test ever done because it's a little too late.
Right.
But he was born in 9 months after Jim Morrison had been through the small town, and he was given up for adoption. And you can kind of see a little bit of it.
There's
a little bit in the cheekbones, maybe. But it's just a guess. That is purely a guess, but there is some validity to it in terms of the timing.
He doesn't know his mom?
He does not know the birth mom, no. And it's, this is just a possibility, and that's the closest I might have to any connection to Jim Morrison.
Right.
He's also a musician, so yeah.
I met, when I used to work for an audio visual company here in San Francisco, one of their audio guys was the live operator for a Doors concert that was here in San Francisco.
Mm-hmm.
And he told me a couple Doors stories, but he also did Jimi Hendrix. He was also the audio guy for the Beatles' last show at Candlestick Park.
Whoa.
Crazy. They still have the board, I believe, in the giant holding area warehouse.
Did I ever tell you that I work with the organist for the Giants?
No.
Steve Hogan. He plays keyboards. He's one of the higher up music guys at Pandora, and he always takes time off during baseball season to go play keyboards, and he plays the organ for all the Giants games.
Oh, wow.
All the home games.
Dun, dun, dun.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. That's awesome.
Yeah.
So this is our year in review show. So George, congratulations on a great year.
Yeah, congratulations, Paco, on 2017 that we are both, as of this taping, we have made it this far. The world has not ended yet.
No, it hasn't. And we're approaching our third year.
Yeah.
Of doing SupDoc.
Crawling up.
And this was our best year yet as far as listens, people listening to our show and just getting, you know, getting better, getting good guests. I don't know about better. I mean,
no, I mean, I think we've
they've all been great.
Yeah, we've had good guests. We just have been figuring out what we're doing. Yeah. 2.5 years into this, I feel like
it takes a while.
Yeah, I feel like there was sort of the idea of this, the way you visualized it, is this, has it played out the way you thought it would play out when you first came up with this idea?
It's better.
It's better than what you thought it was going to be. What did you think it was going to be? I'm just curious what you thought it was going to be, like, for the first year or something.
When I originally thought of this, I've always been a huge what the fuck fan, WTF with Mark Maron, and I love how he doesn't do edits or many edits and how it's kind of warts and all. So I was really, part of my background is I overly edit everything I do to... A lot of times I've lost good stuff because I was like, oh, that's not important. Let's just get rid of it.
You mean in sketch and stand-up, or what do you mean?
Yeah, and making videos, my comedy videos and writing sketches and all that stuff. Mm-hmm. I've edited stuff to a point where I edited too much because I was like, well, that's a mistake, or no one's going to understand that. So I really wanted this to be a warts and all kind of interview. But with the advent of getting Will on board and just doing actually not, you know, across the board edits, but adding clips and, and moving some stuff around, it's actually, I think, helped.
Yeah, yeah. So, it's like the first 8 or 9 or maybe 10 episodes, we did not have clips. And we even went back. That's a good segue into talking about Mayhem, because we went back and recut our very first episode of Mayhem. But yeah, let's explain what Mayhem is, actually, firstly.
Yeah, so for the first time since we've done this podcast, we've added theme months. And we had two. The first one was Mayhem, which was all about true crime documentaries in the month of May. Mm-hmm. And the second one was Rocktober, which was all about music documentaries in the month of, you guessed it, October.
Yeah, like we have to come up with month puns for things to work out, or we could just choose an arbitrary month and decide to do a series. But yeah, Mayhem, we were both watching a ton of true crime documentaries, and it seems like that's what people gravitate to in podcast world. Like, true crime podcasts have been blowing up. Did you check out Dirty John at all? Did you hear about Dirty John? That's like, I think it's an LA Times reporter. I started it, but my girlfriend had listened to the whole thing, so she just explained it to me. And I'm like, yeah, I guess I don't need to hear it now, but it's a pretty bizarre true crime story about a real creepy dude. But that's one of the bigger ones that came out this year, was Dirty John. So that's worth checking out too. And then My Favorite Murder has been huge. Like, which is great to see. I mean, I feel like Karen Kilgariff is having sort of a renaissance overall, and she's always been great, and we should try to get her on here. I've had her at Lost Weekend a couple times. She would always do the Christmas show, or like right around Christmas, because her family is from up here in the Bay. So, anyway, speaking of one of the, I think the probably the one we started with adheres to the true crime format the best, which is us talking to Allison Mick, my co-host from Cinecave Days, a Bay Area comedian, and she wanted to talk about Interview with the Serial Killer, 2009 documentary. Yeah. About
episode 56.
Yeah.
Comedian Allison Mick. It's great talk. And she even had a connection to the doc and the serial killer, because they're basically from the same area of New York.
Yeah. That's Arthur Shawcross. I kind of blanked on his name for a second. I have his face forever emboldened in my brain, this creepy Genesee River killer. So we talked to Allison about that. That's episode 56. That is worth going back in and checking out if you have not. And that was the first one. I think that might have been May 1st, actually. And who else did we talk to? Now,
Vince Mancini about the classic Thin Blue Line. Errol Morris's, I don't think it was his first film, but it was definitely the one that put him on the map. Classic film about a cop who shoots a guy who's driving his car, and he thinks that he's involved in a crime, and as it turns out, he wasn't, and wrongfully convicted, and this film exonerated him.
Right,
one of the first ones.
Yeah, this was, I think that's what this film is kind of known best for, is one of the first documentaries that got a guy off of death row.
So. Yeah, and it's kind of started the, I mean, if you mention the name Errol Morris, it's kind of like a style of documentary filmmaking mm-hmm. that people are even using to this day. I mean, they use the Errol Morris kind of style. Matter of fact, I just watched a documentary where most of the criticism I saw online was like, it's like a knockoff of Errol Morris. So mm-hmm. like it's, and that doc was just made. It's just now on Netflix. So,
yeah,
you know, his influence is being felt even to this day. And my God, I would love to have him on as a,
yeah.
Speaking of a guest.
We tweeted at him.
I did. Yeah, it was a lot of pleases. Please, 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 please be a guest. I feel we're very close. Him, Morgan Spurlock, Chris Smith. Feel like we're close.
We got some feelers out to at least two. We got some feelers out to some people. Errol Morris is on Twitter, and I think he's seen that. I don't know what mm-hmm. he needs to entice him. How about this? If anyone's listening, please at Errol Morris and tell him he should come on the show.
Yes, please help us out.
Add him on Twitter and let him know that. But yeah, our guest for that was Vince Mancini, who does Film Drunk. He writes for the website for Film Drunk and does film reviews and also does a Fraughtcast podcast. And it was his first time on the show, and it was great to have Vince here.
And then we also sat down with Steph Swope and Craig Staggs, the animation producer and director of the documentary Tower.
That's right. And that the animation is a key feature of Tower. If you have not seen Tower, about pretty much the first mass shooting in Texas on a school in UT Austin in the 60s. So yeah, that is they were the animation team called Minnow Mountain, and we did a five-way Skype for that one.
Yes, that's right. Oh my God, that's right.
They were Skyping in the same house in different rooms, I think.
Right, in Austin.
Yeah, so it was
you were in LA.
It was a three-city, maybe four-city Skype because Berkeley, San Francisco, Austin, and Los Angeles. And the Tower is a really moving story about the survivors or the people that a combination of survivors, and like you get no insight into the mind of the killer, the shooter. It's all about the impact that tragic shooting had on the city of Austin and these people's lives, like, you know, decades later. So
wonderfully made documentary. I mean, mm-hmm. the animation's incredible. It really helps strike the tone for that doc. And mm-hmm. If you haven't seen it, you definitely should check it out, which is Tower. And that's episode 58. It's part of our Mayhem Month. And then, like you said, we did a recut of episode one, which was going
it's Matt Lieb. Yeah, we did the Jinx.
The Jinx. Yeah,
with Matt Lieb. And like, gosh, what I was going to bring up the character from the Jinx that's in the news all the time now is Jeanine Pirro, the prosecutor, because she's a Fox News head person now. She's a pundit on Fox News, and she couldn't nail Robert Durst back in the day. So why do we listen to her now? I don't know.
Right. Now she's saying that people at the DOJ and the FBI need to come out in handcuffs. Oh, man. Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, so that was our Mayhem, and it was awesome. It was the first time we ever did a theme month. It worked out really well. We got some great listeners. Hopefully we had some new people, and we're making it exciting for our regular listeners, and we hope to do it again, which would be fun.
Yeah.
And true crime docs, I mean, like, people fucking love true crime docs. You know?
Yeah, I mean, do you love them? Because I feel ambivalent about the whole genre as a whole, and I think I talk about it in this month because there's a lot.
I do like them. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. I do like true crime docs. It depends. Like I was just talking with a guest about The Keepers, which I thought was a horrible documentary. It's a true crime documentary. It kind of depends on the filmmakers. You know, The Imposter is awesome. There's some great true crime docs. Some that I'm like, whatever.
Yeah.
What's the doc with the is it called The Hell? No. The one with the cult leader from Hawaii. And,
oh yeah, Holy Hell.
Yeah, Holy Hell.
Like, would I didn't you call like that a true crime doc? It's hard to say what that one counts as. I didn't really like it as a overall film either. But it's also like hard to say what category it really goes in. I guess it goes in cults more like.
Yeah. He's a, I mean, you know, he did some fucked up shit to people. But yeah. And then we did Rocktober, which was awesome. I really enjoyed that. It's kind of funny. I talked to a friend. He was like, I guess his impression was that we do mostly music docs.
I had someone else say that to me also. Did you?
Okay.
I've heard that like a while ago. People, I think it was even someone I wanted on the show, and they're like, yeah, you guys mostly do music docs, right? We're like, no, it just happens to be that we both were in bands and are music people and know a lot of musicians. So it just, to me, whatever, what makes those is the personality that's being covered. And it could be, and like the same way I like a documentary about something like someone I have no idea like what they do. Like I would watch a documentary, like, you know, we do a sports one, and it's like, I don't know anything about the sports world, but I kind of can relate it to the story of an artist or like, you know, just like an individual who's like goes through these paces. So yeah, with the music documentaries we chose, they're kind of all over the place, but one of them, the one that we started with was one of the ones that we should have been, you know, people have been bringing this up for 2.5 years. People are like, why don't you do The Devil and Daniel Johnston? And we would just were like, well, you know, no one's, the way the show works, usually we just like have someone pitch what they are into talking about. And so a long time,
nobody had picked it yet.
Yeah. Long time listener. And, you know, is a old friend of mine who also listens to the show. And he was like, man, I would really love to do the show. And I would really love to talk about Devil and Daniel Johnston. I'm like, you know what? No one's actually said that yet. So let's just do it. And that was Kip Yulhorn, and he's a musician. You might know his bands Cloudland Canyon. I met him back in the day when he was in this punk band called The Red Scare. And we went to his house in Los Angeles and talked to him about his feelings about the movie. And he had his kid there, and he makes a little... And actually, if you hear a real creepy kid saying, this is SupDoc, that's just Kip's son.
That's
who
Kip's
just,
son.
He apparently just randomly started muttering that to himself. I'm like, I don't think he listens to the show, but we had him do a station ID one time, and now it's just something he does. So that's that creepy kid you hear on our. If you'll hear him on as an interstitial shout out.
Right.
So yeah, that was the beginning of Rocktober,
episode 69, and it's also kind of oddly coincide with Daniel Johnston's retirement tour.
That's right.
That he's on or was on. I think it might be over now, but it was his last.
Yeah. I mean, even reading things about it, it's not totally clear that it's his last tour, but he does not seem like he's in a condition to keep touring. And, So yeah, that was the timing for that. And
then we had a bonus interview with the editor of The Devil and Daniel Johnston. You talked to Tyler Hubby.
Yeah. I talked to Tyler mostly about his documentary about Tony Conrad, which is episode 71. But in between those, we threw in a segment of that interview. I knew I wanted to just talk to him about Devil and Daniel Johnston, and I thought I would like edit those together, but it ends up just being a standalone interview. If you want to hear more about like filmmaking from, and he was really involved in how that film looks and feels as the editor, and like coming up with a lot of the interstitial bits for Devil and Daniel Johnston, or just like Tyler had to convince Jeff Fierzig to do something in CGI instead of this really complicated shot for like just a CD falling down a hole.
Right.
So, yeah. We also did talk to Tyler about Tony Conrad Complete in the Present, which is a pretty great film about the late Tony Conrad. And that was episode 71. So I'm kind of jumping around, but episode 70, we had actually someone who was new to you and me, like not a person that either of us was like initially friends with, but she was really great to have on the show, Tawny Newsome.
Yeah.
Actress, comedian, musician who wanted to talk about Stop Making Sense, the classic Talking Heads concert film. So it's a concert film. And I think we both had this thought of like, how are we going to talk about a concert film the way we talk about these other things, right?
Exactly.
It's a little bit complicated.
It was a little complicated, but as we found out in our discussion, she had been in a Talking Heads cover band.
Yeah.
And also
starting the documentary now, rip on Talking Heads on stopping on this specific film.
Yeah, it was a it's like delightfully layered. Our as we come out of our interview, we find out she has lots of influence by the Talking Heads and was in the documentary now spoof of Stop Making Sense and was actually in a Talking Heads cover band. So
yeah,
that was pretty awesome. And she's like, talk about a triple threat. I mean, she's wonderfully talented, Tawny Newsom. That's episode 70. And like you said, you talked to Tyler Hubby about Completely in the Present, the Tony Conrad.
Great. You managed to see it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's a great film. Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, another one that's just me solo was I spoke with Ed Balloon. He was actually in town working on some music with the guys from Clipping. And so I had been kind of in touch with his label and was like, hey, I think this guy, I've read an interview with him where I thought he would be a good guest to have on the show. So Edmund and I got together and we talked about Hip Hop Evolution, which is a 4-part series, Canadian series about the beginnings of hip hop, really centered on the, you know, the late 70s New York world. And then it sort of ends on gangster rap in L.A. So, yeah, that's, I don't know that I love this as a series. There was cool stuff in Hip Hop Evolution, but, you know, I just watched an SNL bit with Pete Davidson where they were kind of making fun of this type of documentary, which is like guys in their 50s and 60s being like, we weren't like these kids today. You know, we were cool. And then it's like, just shows them dressed as like the village people or like, you know, all wearing these bizarre like leather outfits and then showing like a new guy, like a Lil Peep or like, you know, one of these new like SoundCloud rappers face tattoos and being like, oh yeah, you don't know what real, you know, it's this little bit on SNL, which I thought was specifically, they must have watched this documentary.
Right. Yeah. That's funny. Bits. They're fucking clapping on it. And then we end our Rocktober with episode 73. We talk to legendary comedian Dana Gould, who's much more than just a comedian. I mean, writer, director, series creator, Dana Gould, about Metallica's Some Kind of Monster.
Right. Which he instantly had that in the can because he had worked on a pilot that was based on the idea of being the therapist for a rock band.
Yeah.
He had worked on that with Dave Grohl. So, yeah, if you Google Dana Gould Metallica, that might come up before this episode comes up. But, he's like one of the first comics that I would see on TV, like back in the day in San Francisco. So, yeah, it was pretty nuts having him in the house.
And, yeah, I bet. Yeah, he joined you at your place in LA. I was in San Francisco doing a remote. And he talked about...
He almost didn't make it either. Like my phone was not working and he almost just drove away. Left. But I walked outside and saw him and waved him down.
In classic sup doc form.
Yeah.
We left our award-winning guest out on the front porch.
Have we ever like just not hit record on someone? Has there been time where we had someone and we just didn't hit record? We had actually recordings drop out midway through. That has happened a couple times.
I accidentally hit stop when I was talking to Todd Glass.
Oh my God.
About Religious. Thankfully, I glanced down. I must have hit with my elbow or something on my laptop and I glanced down and I was like, oh shit, it's not recording. I mean, it was probably a minute. So thankfully I was able to like recover, but I was so nervous. That was my first solo interview, and Todd's one of my favorite comedians. So
if anyone can pack a lot into a minute, it's Todd.
we did.
You don't know
what
was lost in that minute.
exactly. But having Dana, I mean, one of the main writers for The Simpsons and Stand Against Evil, his new show. I mean, like there's not much he hasn't done. I mean, shit, he was. He was part of
the alt comedy boom, really.
Well, yeah,
and like the Uncabaret world and all that stuff.
And
too,
Ben Stiller's show, which I loved.
I grew up with that show. Yeah,
me too. Like Manson and like some of my favorite sketches came out of that show. That show was still, I think, is like not given the credit that it should.
Yeah, I watched it a couple years ago when it came out on DVD, and I was like, some of this is very of the early 90s,
right.
But that's okay. I mean, if you watch Mr. Show, it is kind of the late 90s as well. There's like, they just pick things, like there's something still funny about it, even if it's like referencing a specific like De Niro movie or something.
Yeah.
It's still, I think a lot of stuff still holds up. And as Judd Apatow was part of that show as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's just all these Boston people really.
Oh, right.
Yeah. But actually, speaking of Dana Gould and him talking about Metallica for Rocktober, which he's not even a fan of Metallica, and I know that he is like a huge, he always is talking about the Beach Boys and the Beatles. So we actually have a clip from Dana Gould's episode 73, talking about Some Kind of Monster, and he just talks about, you know, how... like basically the all these artists are kind of like recreating these parental relationships, and even with him, like he said on his show Stand Against Evil, it's putting his dad in the X-Files. So he's really a fan of, like, you know, taking these psychological backdrops and then just populating them with funny characters. So here is a clip of Dana Gould talking about father figures on episode 73.
This is why I find the Beach Boys more interesting than Metallica. They both come from very dark, savage, emotionally savage places. Mm-hmm. But the Beach Boys looked clean cut and sang fun, fun, fun.
Right, right.
As a way to who else but somebody whose father beat them so hard they went deaf in one ear would write a song called Fun, 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 because you're just yearning for this thing that you can't experience.
Yeah.
Whereas Metallica went, like, did they went with the obvious intention. You know, they were angry, so they screamed.
Low hanging fruit.
Instead of being angry, so you instead of being angry, so you smile.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's why I find the Beach Boys takes an interesting turn that you don't see. They're both, you know, especially like you see Lars Ulrich, like Lars Ulrich's dad, speaking of Crumb.
Oh, man.
Lars Ulrich's dad looks like Mr. Natural.
Yeah, he does.
And he's just this German. Lars Ulrich plays him a track and he's so proud of it. And he just strokes his beard and goes, if I were you, I would delete it.
That's the father figure that he comes from. That makes sense.
It makes sense. And then you look at Lars Ulrich and go, yeah, I get it.
He's also like a Danish tennis pro or something. His dad was like an award-winning tennis player. Award-winning? Prize-winning tennis player. So
we've all been to the tennis awards.
They're great. They're really fun. Yeah.
So
I remember when Patton Oswalt hosted it.
That's like that kind of crazy bearded patriarch. Also, their manager is also a crazy beard man.
Yeah,
the guy Cliff Bernstein from Q Prime. I'm like, okay, you found another father figure, and then the therapist is yet another father figure,
right?
And they keep chucking them, like you know, it's like, because the problem is not your father figure. The problem is, you know, the really interesting documentary that has not been made is John Lennon's quest for parental figures.
Oh.
And that was sad and failing. You know, he would find these people once he, you know, became a little self-actualized. He would always search for a savior, a father figure, and then he would love them and then turn on them. And at first it was like Brian Epstein and then Brian died. Then it was the Maharishi, and then he turned on the Maharishi. Then it was Arthur Yanov, who did Primal Scream Therapy. Then it was Alan Klein. Then he turned on Alan Klein. Then it was Arthur Yanov, who did Primal Scream Therapy. Hmm. Like, he was always searching for these people and then turning on them because they let him down, because he had given them an impossible job.
Did he do that to George Martin?
I don't think they did it to George Martin, but it was clearly with, like, Brian Epstein was definitely a father figure. And the other psychological aspect of the whole thing, there's a really brilliant book called You Never Give Me Your Money, which is the psychological breakdown of the Beatles breakup as if it was a divorce. And what you see is, especially with John and Paul, these two guys whose mothers died when they were very young, who became completely codependent on each other, could not leave each other until they had replaced their mothers. Paul with Linda, right, and John with Yoko.
Oh, man.
And then once they had replaced their mothers, they grew apart because they began to self-actualize again. Whoa. And of the two in the book, and when you break it down, Paul is vastly more mature than John. And what you see is John doing everything he can to break up the band, short of breaking up the band. And then finally Paul saying, well, fuck it, I'm out. And then John going ballistic because he didn't get to announce it.
So that was Dana talking about father figures and mother figures and the Beatles and the Beach Boys, like talking about having a great guest with a great doc, and what a great mix that is.
I wish we'd talked to him right after Manson died, because he has a lot of bits about Manson as well. And there's that crazy Manson Beach Boys crossover.
Yeah, that is. And I think Manson tried out for the Monkees too. But I think when he auditioned for the Monkees and they said that his teeth weren't nice enough or something like that. Like, so if Manson had better teeth,
oh man,
people would still be alive today, basically.
The Angie's List you know and trust is now Angie, and we're so much more than just a list. We still connect you with top local pros and show you ratings and reviews, but now we also let you compare upfront prices on hundreds of projects and book a service instantly. We can even handle the rest of your project from start to finish. So remember, Angie's List is now Angie, and we're here to get your job done right. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I, or download the app today.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
And so we want to highlight a couple of our favorite talks from 2017. One of which is that we had another legendary comedian come by, Wayne Fetterman, that we talked to at George's in L.A., George's apartment in L.A., and he picked one of my top 10 favorite documentaries, Crumb.
Yeah. And Wayne, it's very weird having all these people in my apartment, I have to say. It's very, very confusing occasionally when I'm looking back at photos. I'm like, oh, we had this person here. We had this person here.
Yeah, that's awesome. Thankfully, they love cats generally.
Yeah.
Sodas. Because during this, we had Wayne try out a disgusting soda that you had. The bubble gum.
Well, it's a bubble gum. It's the Roddy Roddy Piper. They Live bubble gum soda, which I don't know why. Actually, I bought it when we did our live show. That was back in January. So, Wayne and Wayne Fetterman. You've seen him in everything. He's been in everything.
Yeah,
he was just in. I just was watching Transparent this season. He's in an episode of that.
Oh wow,
he's everywhere. But
IMDb Wayne Fetterman. You'll be like, oh yeah,
yeah. And you did a show with him, right? You did a live show with him at Piano Fight.
I did. Yeah, it was a Succotash podcast. Mm-hmm. Us on. Yeah.
The podcast about podcasts.
Yeah, the podcast about podcasts. So Wayne had a podcast at the time. I was there representing SupDoc. He was there representing his podcast. So it was awesome. And he's such a great guy. He's super talented, too. He plays piano. Great stand-up comic. He's also been in a few other docs as well.
Right. We got him to talk about how he's an expert about Reagan's career in SAG, which is on our Patreon as a separate topic. So, this is a clip of Wayne Fetterman explaining why he wanted to talk about Crumb.
If you're going to ask me why I picked this movie.
Yes, why did you pick this?
Because you'd already done Wiener, and that's the one I really wanted to do. It's because unlike most documentaries, which is usually about one thing and some little... This is...
Right.
about genius.
Three, ding, ding, ding.
Ding, ding, ding. Yeah. Commerce,
right.
Luck,
right.
Father, son stuff.
Tons.
Brother, sibling rivalry stuff.
Tons.
Mom stuff.
Tons.
Drug abuse.
Tons.
Drug usage. LSD.
Yeah.
Is a big part of this.
Right.
This, you know, the moms on amphetamines. The, culture and
American pop.
Fame.
Yeah.
Fame is a big part of this.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, that's crazy that he became super famous, you know, and then his just, and also, I just love, there's a scene with him and his son where they're just talking
Jesse.
Where they're just talking like shop.
Yeah.
About
drawing.
Like work. Mouth, yeah. Literally work.
Father, son. Yeah.
No, but I'm saying, like, when you break down Crumb, he does a lot of work.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, you never think of it. You just think, oh, it's like, oh, I'm actually doing this.
Right.
I'm creating this. And so it has any, and they explore all of those themes and more. Am I missing any?
Mental health, I guess.
Yes, mental health. Yeah.
Yeah.
The difference between, I'm not going to use the word gene, but brilliance.
Well,
because I don't want to say it again. And craziness, like that line.
Yeah.
That's we all know that. The way his brothers end up, he could have ended up like that easily, right?
Do you feel like LSD saved him? That's kind of the implication.
I do.
He basically says it.
Re-triggered his brain to not be like his brothers.
Right.
And it also led to his style and like this, the evolution of his drawing style.
Yeah. Well, I think it also helps to
That's a great point.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I think
LSD saved R. Crumb.
It certainly helped. Argument,
okay, say, we're done this podcast, guys.
Good night, everybody. This was fun.
All right. This is, again, forcing Wayne Fetterman to drink some pink soda in my living room.
Yes.
Another great interview we did was at our guest's house. And, like, their house is nicer than my house. But we went
nice.
To the home of Yacht. They live in Highland Park. And I had talked to them a while ago. I'd asked them about doing the show like a long time ago, and just took a couple emails of just bugging them about it.
Mm-hmm.
And first they wanted to do this Netflix documentary about cats. That was like, okay, this is cute, but what are we going to say other than like, we all love cats.
Right.
And then have you seen, I've known them a really long time. Gosh, I'm trying to remember. I think I first saw Jonna playing solo at the Hemlock way back in the day, early 2000s.
Cause they're out of Portland, right?
Yeah, he was living in Portland, but traveling all the time. Like, and those guys are like hooked up with everyone. Like, there's some YouTube video of Jonna playing with Devendra Banhart on like some European TV show.
Oh,
yeah, they know everyone. But Jonna and Claire, I have known for really over a decade.
Oh, okay.
And we had talked about doing this cat video, and then they were like, oh wait, have you seen Tickled? We just watched it. It's crazy. And you actually drove straight from San Francisco to this house in Highland Park,
right to their house on my birthday. Well,
yeah, on your birthday, that's right. And it wasn't even I was there, and we were just eating chips and trying out salsas, and then and then you came, and then we started talking about Tickled. Yacht is not just a band. They're like creative entity that does a bunch of different stuff. Like, they were telling us about how they're refurbishing this public sculpture that's like a light and sound programmable thing in downtown Los Angeles called the Triforium. So
awesome.
We talked about that off mic, but what we wanted to talk about, Tickled is crazy, by the way. It is one of the crazier movies, documentaries. Like, it takes so many insane turns, and it even kept going right after we recorded this episode back in March. So many things came out about David D'Amato. Yeah, there was a follow-up called Tickle King, which actually we talked to Wayne Fetterman about. So this is just a clip of us talking to Jonna and Claire from Yacht at their home about something that Claire did for Vice. This is a clip where we were just talking about the process that David Ferrier and Dylan Reeves went through to make Tickled, like a lot of hidden camera stuff, a lot of like confronting people when they least expect it. And Claire had some experience with that as well.
Do you guys get scared when you see like investigative journalists walk up to people with cameras and stuff?
I had to do that once for a thing, and it was the scariest thing I've ever done.
You had
really?
To do it to someone?
Yeah. This is yeah. actually, that's
was it gotcha
that's
journalism?
We should talk about that.
Yeah, let's talk about it.
Oh, I mean, yeah,
this is
sure.
a short doc.
I shot this doc with Vice that was all about these like really interesting and strange transhumanists in Florida that started a church, transhumanist church, but like it was kind of maybe also secretly like a vitamin racket.
Yeah,
there was like
why is there always a secret racket to everything?
It's like
the Church of Perpetual
Did this air?
On the internet,
on Viceland.
There's this thing where like the guy, sort of like the deacon of the church, is also owns the sort of buyer's club vitamin company. Like, are they related? And where does the money go?
Okay, like
so I had to do a gotcha thing where I like went to their headquarters and knocked on the door and like tried to get in to ask them questions, and it was so scary. And they did have that kind of like leading aggressiveness about it. They were just like, "We've called the police. Like, you have to leave."
Yeah,
that's on camera. Like, you can hear it on camera. It's yelling at you.
I'm just a guy. I don't even actually really care. Like, I just have to come knock on this door, and then I'm happy to leave you alone. It was very scary, and I always get scared when I see it in movies. I think it's so brave.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Anyone that can do that. And you, even like in documentaries where you sort of see like they're supposed to turn the camera off, but they keep rolling.
Right.
Like that stuff. Like, yeah. Can they see the light?
There's
they're
a lot of that
trouble.
In here. There's
yeah, there is a lot. The
that
coffee cup.
That part reminded me of the Jinx in a way.
Yeah. There's like when you, I'm just putting the camera on the ground. It's off now. Mm-hmm. Wink, wink. When they first go, when they're in the van, well, it looks like a really smart, these guys seem really smart. I get the feeling Ferrier's done this before.
It's like PI work in a way.
They seem to have, like, he seems to know what to do.
Yeah.
And his little buddy Dylan Reeve, like, I'm like, you guys probably have done this before.
I mean, he is a TV news, news journalist.
He's
guy.
A little,
he's been in the game.
News? It's like a massive, TV? Like, Seven on Your Side project, basically.
Yeah.
consumer, like.
Yeah, he's like New Zealand TV, right?
Yeah. He's kind of like, but it seemed like all, like, very light, like, I'm going to interview Gwar, like, that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Yes.
Kind of light entertainment. And this became a hard news story,
Gwar.
Like, right away.
I think part of also the motivation of a guy like that is the opportunity to tell, like, a real story as a journalist. I think that's probably quite tempting.
Yeah,
when you're
for
used to doing like wacky puff pieces.
Yeah. But they had that van just like fitted out. Like they knew what. I mean, I was like, damn, girl, totally. You're like, you guys know what to do with the curtains and the. I would have fucked all of that up.
Yeah,
they would
sure.
have seen me just pulling into the parking lot.
Yeah,
like I could not pull that off. But when they get out to walk up. Oh man, I'm like, oh man, what's gonna happen?
It's also just like a moment where you can't blow it, you know? Like,
you can't.
It's very intense as a performance because you have to go up there and just like ask the exact right question and get an answer out of it.
I have to say, I was smitten with these two. For one, I love creative people. I love smart, funny, creative people. And you get that in spades with Jonah and Claire. Like,
yeah.
After this, I became the biggest Yacht fan as well. Like, I love their songs. They're super catchy and poppy and dystopic, you know, apocalyptic kind of themes.
Yeah, it's funny because, like, they treat their band sort of like a cult in some ways. Like, there's a lot of graphic design.
Yeah.
There's a lot of, like... like vague messaging about the future,
but
Claire is writing a book about the history of women in computer engineering, so that's coming out really soon.
Of course she is.
And yeah, like they're always up to something, and I've just randomly run into them a couple of times since then. Like, I think I ran into them when I was shooting a commercial like down in Chinatown, and they were just eating at Burger Lord.
Oh wow.
And I got the 5 every day pin. Yeah, like I've run into them a bunch since then. But yeah, this was a fun episode to do. Definitely watch Tickled. It's nuts.
And the other, my favorite parts of this is after we were done and we were promoting this on social media, Dylan Reeves contacted Jermaine Clement from Flight of the Conchords. And he was like, hey, they were trying to think of like who would play you, you know, or no, we cast him in the doc.
Right. Jermaine Clement as Dylan Reeves.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they turns out they're friends.
Yeah.
And he was kind of responding back. So that was pretty cool because I love Flight of the Conchords.
I mean, if they could do basically like a disaster artist about the Tickle King have both of the Flight of the Conchords guys playing David Ferrier and Dylan Reeves,
that would
be awesome. Pretty amazing.
That
By
would
the
be
way,
awesome.
This is a total digression. Did you see Disaster Artist?
Not yet.
Okay, then we can save that for another time.
Okay, it's a biopic.
I liked it.
Hint, hint.
It's kind of a biopic. Yeah, right. Close enough for our categorical purposes to include.
Right. Yeah.
And speaking of things that are not fitting any category, shall we talk about our live show?
Yeah, of course, because we've been part of SF Sketchfest for the last couple of years, and on honorably so. It's such an awesome. I think it's the best comedy festival in the country, just because of the programming, which is nuts. You don't see programming like Sketchfest has,
and it's like a month festival. Long. It's not like a weekend festival. It's
no,
it's really like you can just every weekend there is like a different group of people from. All around the world,
right.
In San Francisco.
Well, for instance, last year I was talking to at the same table, I'm not trying to drop names or anything because this is just what happened.
It's a podcast. It's fine. Right. That's what it's all about.
Yeah, I just happened to be sitting at this table when other people sat down, but it was me, John Foley, Eugene Meerman, John Hamm. We're at the same
Dave
table.
Dave Foley?
Yeah.
Uh huh.
So I mean, it's like. That's the kind of crazy mix you get at Sketchfest is like just like it's everybody you can think of comes up to San Francisco for this festival. It's such an awesome festival. So anyways, we had our live Sketchfest taping at Piano Fight, which is a club here in San Francisco. And we showed Memorial Day 2000 to a live audience and we assembled a hilarious panel of comedians, including Corey Sklar. From Illogical Contraption, comedian Emily Van Dyke, Frankie G, and Melissa McQueen out of L.A., who's part of the Comedy Store and Hollywood Improv.
And we've both done Melissa's show in Pasadena at the cafe.
Yeah, Barney's Beanery upstairs.
Cafe, yeah.
Everyone should go to see her show at Barney's Beanery in Pasadena. But it was great because Memorial Day 2000 is hard to describe. It's like...
It is.
It's everyone's hellish home video that made it onto the internet and became a cult classic. But our whole thing was like showing kind of a short doc and then assembling a panel to talk about it, which is what we did.
Mm-hmm. And you had, did you know about this before I showed it to you or did you know about my real thing? But you're even from Michigan, like near where this takes
place.
I've
actually been to this area that they filmed this in. It's a beautiful area. But no, I never had seen it. And then watching it, it's just the only thing you can think about is like what happened off camera, like all of all the crazy shit that happened on camera in this 20 minute documentary.
It's as quotable as Heavy Metal Parking Lot. Like there's so many things that are quotable, but it's also such a micro, it's such a cult thing that not many people know it. Like less people know about this than Heavy Metal Parking Lot by like a mile. I had heard about it because the people that had edited this together, Nautical Almanac, were like this noise band that was touring around in the 2000s, and this VHS tape just made the rounds, and it was just a complete like found footage.
Yeah.
Type it's very much like the found footage phenomenon, but it was edited together,
right?
And selectively put together for sure. And also, I have to apologize to anyone who was at Piano Fight and ordered the delicious food at Piano Fight because
there are some gross moments,
extremely gross things that happen in Memorial Day 2000. Don't recommend. It would make you queasy, and the food at Piano Fight is too good.
It is delicious
to put down. So
made by one of our buddies, Joseph Annalyn.
Yeah, I think he was actually working that day.
Yes.
And he was like, "What the fuck, you guys showing?" but yeah, that was our live show, Sketchfest. You can from back in January listen to that one. Actually, you got to watch Memorial Day 2000.
Yes,
it helps a lot to break it down. And I've been wanting to show it to a group of people that has never seen it before. It's a little bit like The Room in that way. It's like I know what happens. I want to introduce other people to it and just watch the horror, watch the blood drain out of their face during this thing.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, gosh. So anyway, that was Memorial Day 2000.
You can watch it on YouTube too.
Like, it is
on YouTube.
Yeah. I actually even I tracked down the DVD-R to screen. We screened the DVD-R, and I had to track it down from a friend. And it was like, because I thought it maybe had better quality than the YouTube.
Right.
It's about I mean, it's better than a YouTube. It's not as compressed as a YouTube, but it was made also. It was sold by Carly and Twig off of their website back in the days of DVD-R. So I borrowed a copy from a friend to show at Piano Fight, and then had to mail it back to them.
Oh my god! But
it's just a DVD-R. I don't know. I'm not great. It's not something that's floating around. There's not like a high res version floating around the internet, right. Really.
Awesome. All right. So out of that, let's take a moment to we talked about Patreon, and we have a Patreon page, obviously, and we certainly are super excited and give great thanks to anybody who's able to donate whatever they can, because it certainly does keep the lights on, as it were. And
we got some fees attached to just running a podcast. I mean, hosting and web stuff and all that.
And so, you can go to our Patreon page, which is at patreon.com/supdocpodcast to donate. But we want to give some shouts out to our Patreon supporters. So thank you, Alina Mansfield.
Yeah, Alina Mansfield. I know, because we're old college friends. Angie Britsky, Annette Marines, David Roth, John Schamberger, Jamie Borshuk, James Railing.
James, thank you.
Jana Jo Belts.
Thanks, Jana.
Your friend, Janet Flemmer. And longtime listener Mike Shiflett just signed up recently.
Thank you, Mike.
You
guys are awesome.
Yeah.
If you ever want to come over, I'll make you some dinner. We'll put on George's comedy album and watch some docs. How's that sound?
I don't know how it sounds to them.
Word origami. Order it today.
Yeah, well, that's true. Like, we both have records available on the streaming services, on Pandora, on Spotify,
Requiem
on
for streaming
iTunes.
Service.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah. So speaking of nothing, apropos of nothing, hey, what else happened this year, Paco?
Well, we got some press, and I'm very excited about this. I think just to get some recognition. I mean, there are how many podcasts are there? 2 billion? 1 billion podcasts? My mom has
one per person in LA. Yeah, one for every person who lives in San Francisco and LA has
right. So that's like 50 million, let's just say. Anyways, it's just nice to be recognized. We got some nice press. I thought it'd be nice to highlight it. George thought it would be fun to read these in an accent, which I think is funny. So, George, give me an accent you want me to
read the first one, read it in the accent of the crocodile hunter.
Okay. So I also want to just quickly, these are just quotes. These are not the full write-ups. This is just
quote. That'll be too long.
Yeah.
To do the whole write-up.
This one's by Mark Hirschhorn from Splitsider said, "Sup, crikey. Sup, Doc is away. A fun way to pour over ducks."
So thank you, Mark. I've been wanting to get on Splitsider for a while.
Yeah,
and we finally did it and he wrote up the Dana Gold episode.
That's right. So, thank you, Mark Hirschhorn, who also does the Succotash podcast. Yeah. So check that out. Read his column.
Sister podcast or brethren podcast.
Yeah. Pretty much at this point. Yeah. All right, so we also got a write up in Comedy Cakes. So read this as if you were Werner Herzog.
Oh, I thought I was just going to make you do it. Okay, great.
No, I thought we were going to take turns.
All right. Okay, let me try this. "The knowledge, wit, and compassion can get you through anything." Deborah Tamasyan from Comedy Cake. I realize I wasn't ready, and that was great. Not, and it never gets better.
You want to try it again?
No, I do not want to do it again. And I'm trying to think for you.
Before we go, I do like how you ended that with a little bit of a Ken Burns Civil War, Deborah Thomason comedy cake. It was a little.
This reminds me of we were trying to listen to the audiobook of George Saunders, Lincoln and the Bardo, which has like 35 different voice actors on
it. Jesus. Yeah.
And it's all based around quotes. So they all end with like a quote like that. So maybe that's what I was thinking of. I'm trying to really, I thought I had more chances to stump you. I want you to do a woman. And I'm trying to think, we already did Australian woman is too close to what we just did.
That is
so
true.
Let's go with, like a Project Grizzly Canadian woman.
Okay. Project Grizzly Canadian woman. Okay.
Like, yeah, like someone who would be on the sidelines in Project Grizzly.
All right. This is from Boing Boing and
Mark Fraunfelder.
Mark Fraunfelder wrote this. Okay. Sup Doc is a great idea for a podcast series. Interviews with interesting people about their favorite documentaries, eh? What do you think?
I don't know. I don't. We're not getting any jobs off of this.
You're supposed to just go. You're supposed to say that was awesome.
That was awesome.
Thank you.
Awesome, Paco.
Yes, and this. Let's just yes and this entire thing.
All right.
Okay. So that was a quote that we got from Boing Boing, but like he said, which was about the Wayne. George said about the Wayne Fetterman Crumb episode. So thank you, everybody that listened to Sup Doc in 2017. For those people who've been with us from the beginning, my God, you guys are angels. You guys are angels. And for people who just started listening to us, thank you so much for being a part of Sup Doc. And we hope to make you proud in 2018.
Yeah, like someone's got to make us proud in 2018.
Right.
And not only is there just, you know, if you can't do the Patreon thing, you know what we would appreciate is if you just tell a friend about the show.
Amen.
I think word of mouth is... Every podcast I've gotten into, it's been a friend telling me about it, and mm-hmm. that's like the way that like this stuff works best. You know, you trust your friends, and also we could use reviews and ratings on iTunes. That's still the number one way that people find the show. And you know, it's been a while since we've been new and noteworthy. I think we've always been noteworthy, but we are not new anymore. We have not been new for 2 years.
That's how I feel about my life. Yeah. Yeah, definitely spread the word and hit us up on social media. Follow us on Twitter at SupDoc Podcast, Instagram at SupDoc Podcast, Facebook, guess what, at SupDoc Podcast.
And, I've even putting cute pictures of my cat on our Instagram. Oh, yeah. Sherby's on our Instagram now. If you can't get likes for a cat picture on Instagram, something's wrong.
Something's wrong. But yeah, keep watching docs, man, and email us too, supdocpodcast@gmail.com. Let us know what you're watching. If you have any reviews, let us know about that. Just feel free to contact us and be part of it, because without you, I mean, it's just George and I talking, and you know, we need you guys. So thank you guys so much.
Thank you.
And we'll see
Happy
you
New Year.
Happy New Year. Yeah, happy holidays.